All right, welcome to the sixth episode of our podcast, Up on Foil, where we talk about and talk to people who enjoy being on foil. I'm Matt, living in Switzerland.
And Gael, living in Cyprus, currently in Greece. And today we've got a very special guest.
Yes, Gwen Lututu. Is that pronounced correctly?
Yeah, it's perfect, yeah.
All right, he's...
Yeah, yes. My first name is actually Gwendal, but because I live in the US, Gwendal would be... something unheard of, so I just say Gwen.
All right. Yeah, for sure. He's one of the faces of Wingfoil Pro Center. He makes great YouTube tutorials on Damien Leroy's channel, who has over 77,000 followers. And he was and is one of my teachers, actually, virtual teacher in winging and foiling. First, I'd like to say thank you very much. And then, did I forget anything?
No, I think that's... That's about it. I mean, thank you so much for having me, and I'm honored to be on your podcast.
Thank you. It's our honor. Yeah, it's for me the same. Like, if I was able to pump foil in the first place, and if actually kids started my YouTube channel, if I have to be honest, it's just because of you, because of your videos and your tutorials. Yeah. So thank you very much, and it's our honor to have you on.
And maybe you can just tell us first, how do you get into water sports in the first place? You told us just before that you're originally from Brittany, and that's probably where you went out on the water.
So basically, I grew up in Brittany, which is on the coast, on the Atlantic coast in France. So definitely, got experience from, in the water from just living there. So I grew up surfing and windsurfing, but not like very good at all, so it was something that I was doing, but it was not like my focus, so it was kind of like a fun thing to do. So I would say, like, in surfing and windsurfing, I never got really good. I was very average. But I was always very, passionate about it, passionate about the ocean. I grew up, one of my, biggest inspiration growing up was Robbie Nash, because windsurfing was big back then. And, he came a few times to compete in Brittany. So, I saw him. And so that's how I got my foot into, like, water sports. But like I said, because I wasn't very good, it wasn't necessarily like a focus. I went on to work. I went in the army at first, and then I kind of like went back to college, and I went to work on ships. I traveled, and so for like I would say maybe almost 10 years between age 20 and 30. I pretty much didn't do any water sports because I was traveling, I was working, I was maybe doing something fun in the water, like, maybe once a month or something. So I kind of like lost like touch of it, for a bit. And then, foiling came around, and I felt like that was really interesting to me. At the time, I was I worked / volunteer for Sea Shepherd for many years, and so I didn't really have any money, and so when foiling came out, like I wanted to do it so bad, but I just couldn't, I didn't have the money to justify to buy a foil, and so I would say for like at least like 2-3 years maybe, I just watched videos of foiling almost every day. So passionate about it, but never tried it at all.
What kind of foiling?
Any kind of foiling. I've always like really loved water sports. So, from Robbie Nash, that I started like saying, like, he was a huge inspiration growing up, to Kyle Ennie. So it was kind of like that. I was like, my dream one day would be to do it all. But doing it all, that, this is like a very expensive, like, like sport, like, because we are talking like, if you want to surf, you want to windsurf, you want to kite surf, you want to kite foil, you want to wing foil now and pump foil and all of that stuff. I mean, it's like, I was like, you know, I couldn't buy even one foil. So, I wanted to do it all, but I was doing none of it. And so finally, you know, after a few years, I found like a used foil for like $400, and I just got the foil. I didn't actually, you know, I was always watching, you know, foiling, but I didn't really know exactly what I needed to learn. Like, I feel like there wasn't that much information out there. So when I finally got a foil that I could afford, $400, turns out it was a pretty good beginner foil, but I had no idea. It could have been like a terrible foil to learn. It was a Takuma V100, I think, like a big spoon foil, super thick. And I just got the foil and I was like, I'm going to take this thing. I went to the we have a used store, not like a water spot, like a used store, you find like, you know, anything. And I found like an old wake burn for like, I don't know, $10 or $15. And I drilled some holes in it and I mounted that foil. And because it was a wake burn, that, you know, there was no deck. It was supposed to be with boots, you know. So I went to the supermarket and I got like a shower,
mat. Yeah, the rubber mat. Yeah.
I got a shower mat. I duct taped it to that burn, you know, mounted my foil on it. I actually got a piece of rope from the nose of the burn to the foil because I was like, that thing might snap. You know, I mean, it's not a foil burn. So if it snaps in two pieces, if I tie the nose to the mast, then the two pieces are still connected and hopefully it still floats, you know? So got that set up and then went to the dock and ran and jumped on it like over and over. And it didn't work at all. Like literally zero success. I maybe spent like an hour or something. I don't know how many times I tried, but it was not a glimpse of a glide. It was, I would jump on it, fall immediately. And it's pretty normal now knowing what we know, you know, somebody that's never been on foil. It was a good beginner foil, but not a good, you know, dock step foil. It was a bit too small for that. And so the when I was like, okay, you know, this is, I don't think it's possible to learn like that. So because I knew how to kite, then I got an old kite, and that's how I learned how to foil. I like basically, I was okay, you know, it's going to be the easiest way to learn how to foil. And so I spent time doing that, probably like a year. I only kite foil. I mean, I guess that's kind of like how it all happened.
That is so cool. When was that? When was your first dock start try?
It was in 2019, like, yeah, I think end of 2019.
Yeah.
So you had a pretty steep, but you had still a pretty steep learning curve, like considering the level that you have right now.
Yeah. With a kite, it was actually not too bad. So like I definitely spent quite some time, you know, with my kite and it really gave me like good basis, but like, you know, looking back at the journey, like, you know, I didn't pump foil for a long time, you know, like considering, you know, okay, I tried dock starting right away, didn't work, then went into kite foiling. And I would say I knew how to pump at least like 2 years after that, you know.
That's
so
crazy.
So when I see like people, like when people reach out to me and they say like, you know, I want to pump foil, and if they don't know how to foil, I'm like, you understand, it's a very like hard thing to do. Like, oh,
yeah.
I mean, it just, you have to build into it, I feel like.
But it's, yeah, it's very interesting. You talking about that old gear. Do you still have that old gear? And the second question is, would you now be able to pump that?
So I actually, I kept it. And I still have it right now. I'm like letting somebody like, use it to learn because it's a good foil to learn foiling. And I used it for a long time, and then I, you know, got something else, and I went back a few years later to it, and not pump foiling, so I don't know how it would be, but I went back winging with it, and I was like, this thing is has so much drag, I could barely do a jive, because as soon as like you let off power, it just it wants to stop, like it's just like has zero glide. So I feel like I probably wouldn't be able to pump it because it like requires to be so powered. In the same time, if it flies very slow and it's very stable, but it's pushing so much water that unless you have like really good power, it just stops. Yeah. Well, in the same time, you know, it's so expensive, like all of that stuff. Like it's like, yeah, if you like, so, I feel like with today's gear, like you could have one setup and kind of do it all. Back then, I feel like it was maybe harder.
Yeah, for sure. And what would that set be?
Well, you know, I would say definitely like, you know, back then it was like a lot of like low aspect foils. Now I think high aspect can work really well for everything. So I would say, you know, it would have to be high aspect. It would have to be like not super thin, like, you know, you can get like a pretty performance foil, like thin, like, but, you know, if you wanted to, you know, a foil that's easy to use, that can do everything, I would say, no, you know, not ultra thin, not ultra fast. So decent lift. And like, in terms of like size, like if you get something around like, you know, 1300 high aspect, not super thin, I feel like you could do a lot of things with that foil.
True.
So if you're on a budget, that's the way to go.
On a what?
If you're on a budget, if you don't, yeah. Because what I always think, like, all right, I have this now. This foil would be cool for that, and then you have this garage full of different foils, and it's just as you said, it's super expensive. So if you're on a budget, if you can choose one foil, that's the way to go.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you one thing, because you said that you started off with, I think there is a little bit of a delay, but anyway, sorry if I interrupted you. But anyway, you said that you started off with kite foiling because that was what you were familiar with. So would you suggest that? So if someone wants to approach foiling and has done something before, would you suggest to get into it with something that is already familiar?
For sure. If a kiter wants to, you know, like, get into pump foiling, I would say, you know, kite foil first. If it's somebody that has not done necessarily anything, like, or maybe it's a surfer, you know, not anything like wind sport, then I would probably say like wing foiling is probably the most, the easiest way to learn foiling. Because if somebody has not learned how to, doesn't know how to kite, I don't think learning how to kite and foil is a good idea. So if you don't know how to kite, then getting into winging is definitely the best. And, you know, the easiest, I think, would be tow foiling. But then again, you know, that means like you have a boat, that means you have somebody towing you. So it's not necessarily accessible to everybody. But that would be the easiest, I would say. Then it would be wing foiling or kite foiling for somebody that comes from a kiting background.
How about e-foiling? Do you see it as something that could be a progression?
Well, yeah, for sure it could be, but like personally, I would say in my world, I don't really like know anybody that would be able to like buy an e-foil. So I feel like the e-foil is a pretty limiting tool, because. Sure, you know, it kind of like, you know, relates maybe a bit more to pump foiling in the way that like you are foiling and you're not, you know, leaning against something. But like for the cost of it, like it's pretty quickly, you pretty quickly reach the end of like your potential. So, you know, that's in my world, that's not something I would say like to somebody like you need any foil.
You told us your story and how you you progressed kite surfing and then all these different foiling activities. Now you do everything, and we see you doing those on video. If you had to choose the spot, the conditions, whichever you want, which activity would you do tomorrow?
I mean, 100%, you know, my favorite thing to do right now is downwind subfoiling. Like, to me, it combines every aspect of foiling that I love, you know, because it has the physical aspect. Like, you know, I feel like I like doing something, like I don't have a ton of time, so I don't want to be like that's another thing. Like, e-foiling to me is like, you know, you don't get a workout, like, I don't know. Like, so to me, it needs to be, if I have minimum time to spend on the water, and it needs to be beneficial in a way that, like, I'm going to get a workout, it's going to get me, like, fit and healthy, and it's going to be fun. You know, downwind subfoiling has that. It's kind of like riding waves, and it has the adventure aspect in a way that, like, you travel from one spot to another. And then, to me, it's the most social sport in foiling, because everything else, you know, maybe dog standing, but I don't tend to be in an area where I have a dog start community. So most of the time, if I'm dog standing, I'm on my own. But downwind subfoiling is, to me, the most social thing, because you need people to do shuttle. And then you actually spend time with people because you have to be in the car with them to shuttle. Where winging, you can have a community, a winging. You show up to the spot, you pump your stuff, you go out, you have your session, you deflate, you know, you pack it up, you go home. And you haven't necessarily spent time with people. So downwinding is, to me, it combines all of those aspects.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and it's really cool because I had this longer wing foil board and I wanted to try downwinding and I failed miserably. It was my first try. And then I thought, well, maybe my board is too small. Then you posted that video where you started on a sinker board. So I thought, all right, I have no excuses anymore. So yeah, I mean, let's take it over.
I want to say something because, like, you know, for sure, downwinding is to me the thing I prefer, but it's also, I believe, like, the most challenging activity. It's more difficult. So it kind of like it's a bummer. It's what's gonna slow down the progression of the sport because it's so fun. But it's very hard. So I think a lot of people are going to try, be disappointed, give up. The other thing is, like, you don't necessarily, like, see it. So to grow the sport, like, people are, like, way out there. You know, you don't necessarily see them doing it. But the gear, to me, the gear is, like, sure, you know, it is important. But I also never want, like, I feel like you can learn on almost, you know, anything. You just have to understand it's going to be very difficult. And if you get the right equipment, it's going to make it a bit easier, but it's not going to make it easy by any means. It's still going to be very hard. So downwinding, I would say, you know, because I have a wing foil pro center in the shop and I sell gear, and I never, you know, like, I hate, you know, pushing people buying stuff when they don't need it. And I have a lot of customers that are, like, very conservative into, like, in terms of, like, buying new gear. You know, they only buy what they need. And I saw a pattern that, like, you know, people are, like, very conservative with gear when it comes to, like, winging, kiting, and even, you know, maybe pump foiling, and they get into downwinding, and then they can't resist buying new stuff, the newer stuff, because downwinding is so difficult that you just want to believe that there is that one piece of equipment that's going to make it easier. And it's not, like, it's going to be, sure, maybe, like, better. Once you do it, you know, you can really enjoy the benefit of having newer gear. But until you know how to do it, you probably won't get the benefit of the newer gear, because it's still going to be very, very difficult. So I would say, you know, in your case, unless the setup is completely wrong, in most cases, I would say people getting into downwinding, if they have, like, a bit of, like, older gear, it's still going to work. You just have to, like, I mean, it's so hard. You have to keep at it.
Maybe you can help me out here, because I used my pump foil front wing, which was huge, to downwind, and maybe that's not good because it breaks too much. I was on a lake like Neuchâtel, and I thought maybe I should take a little the smaller front wing, because I used it for wing foiling, and I did a little downwind, and it was super cool. The wing always like flapping behind, and that worked perfectly well. But I was scared of using the smaller, and it's not small; it's like 1,200 square centimeters. Use that to sub foil, but I was scared, so I took the huge 2,000 square centimeter one.
I mean, I would say, you know, I have like, you know, downwinded with the 1900, like a 1900 square centimeters, like the sub foil, like 1350, like, you know, big, slow pump foil. And, you know, I do think it's good. Like, you know, you just have to pick the condition, of course. Like if you are in places like, you know, Hood River or south of France, where you have like, you know, massive conditions, yeah, that's not gonna work. But on lakes or even on the ocean, on like really like small light days, I do think it's a really good foil to learn, because it's kind of like the same. It's all the same principle. I mean, to me, yeah, when you know how to pump foil and you get into downwinding, you have a huge advantage. I feel like a lot of people get into downwinding and they come from, you know, winging or something else, and they don't know how to pump foil. That's very hard because there is a lot of pumping in downwinding. And I know, Guy, like you've done like videos on like kind of like focusing on like learning how to glide and how like important that is. And downwinding is exactly learning how to glide, except, you know, when you learn how to glide on fly water, you kind of like got some speed, you glide, and then you pump again. Here, you just glide and you try to slow down to match the speed of the bump, and then you're gonna start feeling it. So it's the exact same principle, just like at, you know, maybe a different speed, and like learning how to read the swell and how to find that right spot where you can just glide and you just use the energy from the bump. But like learning how to pump and learning how to glide at different speed, like being able to not make the foils like pump, glide, and almost like sometimes a good drill would be like you're gonna glide until you get, you know, your board back to the water. You try to glide the furthest you can without making the foil style. Because what you need to learn is like how the sweet spot change depending on your speed. And that's very important when you downwind, because, you know, sometimes you get the bump, you need to slow down, you need to accelerate, and that weight has to shift. But what people have the most like hard time is when they start slowing down and they are not able to move their weight forward, and then they make it stall, so they make it worse. Where really, if they were used to a good drill, would be you pump and you're going to glide as far as you can to find that perfect slope that's just not too down, otherwise you get down to the water too quick. You had plenty of like, you know, speed left that you could have used. Try to use just like the right slope so you go downhill and feel how as you start slowing down, it wants to like lift even more, but you keep it down and you never made the false start. To me, like that's like the perfect thing to learn for any foiling activity.
If you practice a pumping like drill, then you're gonna really feel that as you're losing speed, you really need to shift your weight far forward. And I believe it's also a matter of the shape of the foil, because I heard that with more kind of like these foils that has a more not shaped profile, so like they are more like sticks, then you don't really need to shift the weight that much. But if, for example, it's very shaped, like we might see these foils for wing foiling, then you really need to shift your weight a bit more.
I would like to ask you, because you talked about the perfect condition and whatnot, and you were at the race in Causon, and if I saw that correctly, you had two downwind races, and the conditions weren't perfect. How was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, it really was a pump foil competition, I would say. Like, you know, like there was no skill, like there was no gliding skills involved at all, because there was no glide. I mean, unless you just pump and glide of your own speed, like there was no bump that you could use any glide. I would say, unfortunately, you know, that was the condition we had, and it made it very, you know, challenging. And I would say maybe like it was a different sport, really. But the thing is, like, we didn't have the chance to like know the condition because the wind was offshore. So, of course, by the shore, it's totally flat, zero bump. And we were going to start out there. So you couldn't know what we were going to, how the bumps were going to be out there. So you had to rig your gear, get out there, and then we would start. And so we kind of like believed it was going to be something to ride. And it's a race. So everybody's excited. Everybody's like, I need to be fast. I need to rig something small. And we get out there, and not only the conditions were small, but on top of that, it actually dropped. So by the time we go for like, or like we are out there, and I understand the race director, because there is 100 people, 100, you know, racers. We are, by then, we are maybe like 2 miles offshore, and there isn't really any condition to downwind, but you have 100 people, and telling them that they have to go back two miles against the wind is, you know, it's not, people are not going to, maybe like it's going to take forever. And so the only option is like, well, we have to go for it. We have to race. We have to get to the other side. So that was the race. And like, it turned out it was like totally flat. We were all on like smaller falls than we needed. And so with a downwind subfall, some of the top guys were like, you know, incredible. Like, they did it so fast. They pretty much didn't come down. I don't even know how. For like most of us, it was like you would paddle up on fly water, which, you know, takes some energy, like when it's not a big foil, you know, and then you pump as fast as you can until you are about to blow up. When you're about to blow up, you come down, you rest, and you try to do it again. And you do that for 10 miles. So I counted, you know, I recorded the run, and I did 33 paddle up. So it was like 33 times I paddled up, I pumped as fast as I could, and then I came down and tried to recover. And as soon as I was ready, I would do it again. But everybody was doing that. So we were all like passing each other, passing. And it was like a game of like, when somebody passed you, you are like, okay, I can do it. I can try to follow them. And so it was very a different sport. I would say like, this fun aspect of downwinding was gone. Like, there was none of that. It was all work. And it was a bit frustrating because none of us had the right gear.
And was that on both races?
The second race, I would say, was like a bit better because everybody was like so traumatized from the first run that like we all like oversized. Like, we were like, I'm not going to get into that again. So I would say maybe the second race, we had a tiny bit better condition, but a lot of us had like almost too big of a fall because we were like so scared. But it was still like, you know, all pumping pretty much. Like, you could maybe get some glide. But I would say, like, in my case, I had maybe a bigger fall than I needed. But it, like, everybody was like so like scared that, you know, I mean, you want to try to fly the entire time. That's the goal. So like the second race, I did fly the entire time. I only did like one paddle up, and then I was, you know, gone. But I was maybe a bit slower because of like, I played it a bit too conservative.
And did you participate in the dog start race, the pump foil race too?
Yeah, I did. And that was like a good experience. I didn't do good at all, but it was very interesting. The race format. We had five docks, and it was a race. So we would all go. There was two buoys. We would go around the buoy, however you want to go, whatever direction you want to go around the buoy, and then come back. And it was basically just an out and back. So what was interesting was like the docks were not all the same height. So it was kind of weird. Like, you, before your race, you would pick a number, and so you would, you know, maybe get lucky and get like a dog that's low, that's ideal, or you don't get lucky and you get the highest dog and it's like difficult to take off. So the highest doc, I would say, like, it required you to pretty much have your hand where your feet are to hold your ball. So you are totally bent over. And so that's, like, you know, pretty difficult. So there was this like aspect that, like, the takeoff to me was technical. And, you know, you have to take off, because if you don't, the race is over. You know, everybody's leaving. You know, you only have one chance to do your takeoff. So that affect the choice of your foil. And then the other aspect was that you go around the buoy. So you do a very sharp turn. That also affects the foil you're going to pick. Because if you get, you know, if you get a really small foil, when you break your turn like that, it's very hard to pick up speed again. So you almost get slower, because a small foil, when you are not at speed, is so, it takes so much energy, and it's actually slower than a bigger foil, you know, to some reason. So that kind of, like, affected the choice of the foil. So I went with, like, the 900 AFS Enduro, which I think is a pretty fast foil. I probably had, like, one of the fastest foil that everybody was, like, riding. So, you know, you get in your hit, you have five people against you, and my first hit was, like, very competitive, like, a lot of good guys, like, you know, you don't pick. So that was, like, adding a lot of stress. So now, like, you know, you are at the dock, you are waiting for the start, and you know everybody's really good, and you can't mess up your takeoff. And you are not, like, I was not 100% sure I would get the takeoff. Like, I couldn't say I could get the takeoff 100% of the time. I got it to, like, maybe, like, 90% of the time. But when you add stress to, like, that was me practicing before. When you are in a competition, you had, like, the stress of everybody. Like, that's another, you know, thing. But we got the start. I got my takeoff really good. And I was, like, I had plenty of, like, it was all perfect for me. The race was going perfect. I got to the buoy to turn around. I came first to the buoy, so I was pretty stoked. And I would say that's the extent of, like, what I had been practicing, pretty much. I was, like, I didn't really think about, like, how technical the turn was. I was like, you do your turn, you pump again, done deal. Except all of the guys that were there are, like, I mean, world-class, like, you know, wave riders. Like, they foil waves really good, some of the best on the planet.
They know the sharp turns, right?
So I didn't understand how quick or how perfect their turn could be, in a way that they come out of their turn, they didn't lose any speed. They actually almost, like, picked up speed, you know? And I just did a glidey turn around the buoy. Like, I didn't even think that was, like, a factor. So I come out of the turn and I'm last. And I was, like, before the buoy, I was first. Out of the turn, out of the, like, I was last. So then I'm, like, finding myself right behind someone. And I did, because I did, like, kind of like a turn, like gliding turn, I needed to accelerate again. But I was right behind someone, so I was in their track. And you know how, like, when you are, like, in someone, like, in someone's track, it's this weird feeling. You have to pump hard, and it's not even working that much.
And you never know how it reacts, right?
Yeah.
It's like going enduro with a road bike.
When you get into a rut. And so I'm, like, working so hard, and it's not even accelerating. And so I finished, like, fourth into that first race. We were five, but one guy missed the takeoff. So I finished, four, and, only the first one, moved forward. Everybody else went to the second round, kind of, or, like, do your second chance, kind of. So everybody that didn't get first gets to try again. So I get to another hit, and I get again with, like, a really good guy in my hit, and I'm like, dang it. Like, I mean, I have, you know, good experience. So I'm I should be able to, like, you know, compete even against some of those guys. But it's always a bit like, you know, it gets in your head when you know you have somebody that's, like, you know, really good. So I, you know, I'm first step, I'm like just worried I'm not even going to get the takeoff. So, you know, okay, we go, I get the takeoff, good. I'm first again, feeling really good. And then I see him, like, it was Oscar Johansson. I see him passing me. Oof. And he was right next to me. And it's just like, I don't know, something in my head, like freak out. And I'm not even pumping good anymore. And I even come down. I come down. So now game over. So that was like my experience. I would say the level was, like, you know, really high. And, like, I do a lot of, like, dog standing, pumping, because of the fact that, like, I often don't have wind or wave. So that's kind of like my only way to get falling, to get exercising. But those guys don't do a lot of dog standing, but I mean, you know, they do so much foiling. So they are like some of the best guys on the planet. Like, you can't, I pretty much knew, like, going into this race, you know, there was a few guys like me that did a lot of, like, dog standing. I pretty much knew that whoever was going to win this race was not going to be a dog stander, because the level was so high. Like, those guys don't need to practice dog standing, because what they do get them, like, so good at it, you know. So
I was really surprised when I saw the videos. They didn't use foot straps, because when we had in Vinglas, there was the Swiss championship, and the top guys had foot straps. They pumped 700 square centimeter photos, incredible, but they all used foot straps.
I don't know. I mean, I'm actually surprised. Like, I have never seen really, like, somebody pumping with foot straps. I feel like, to me, the foot straps, like, add another level of uncertainty, you know, into
for the start. Process.
Like, because we had dogs that were not the same height. It was like, you really had to adapt to the situation. And so if, to me, the foot straps would work if it was like, there was, like, let's say, a standout, like, every dog is, we know it's always going to be the same. That's the thing you practice with. So, you know, you get into the race, you are so dialed in, boom, you get your dog stand, your feet are in the straps, you know, maybe. But in situation where, like, you have to adapt and you don't really know what you're going to get, I don't know. I would like to see like someone that would be able to consistently start a small foil with foot strap on a dog that can be, you know, all over the place.
So I saw that almost none of them had a small board. They all had like a surfboard. And do you think that, I mean, were these a rule? I mean, was this a rule, or they just picked what they were familiar with?
No, it's because, you know, people travel. So the competition was downwinding, surf foiling, and dog standing. And like I said, all of those top guys only brought one downwind burn and a surf foil burn. And they were not going to travel one. They probably don't even have a dog stand burn, because they never dog stand. And so they just did with what they had. They only brought those two birds and small foils. That's also part of the reason why, like, even in the downwind race, you saw, like, the results were not really fair, because in a way that, like, some of the guys that travel that are, like, you know, should have been at the top, because of the limitation of what you can travel with, they didn't even have a big enough foil. They only came with big foils, small foils. So some of those top guys that should have been, like, really, like, you know, at the top, ended up in the back, not because they didn't know how to do it, or they didn't know how to do it in those conditions. They just didn't have the gear that would allow them to do it.
But I think the thing that it's unfair there were not weight categories, were there? So also, if you're lighter, like 20 kilos lighter than someone else, you have a huge advantage.
Well, it's funny because, like, you know, it's not like always like weight, you know, has an advantage in some situation and doesn't in some. So I would say when it's light, probably a lighter weight has an advantage, but when it's strong, a heavier weight has an advantage. A heavier weight can really make a small move faster than a lighter weight. So I would say it's not always an advantage to be lighter. And some of the guys, I mean, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Kane the Wild, he crushed it in every, you know, in the downwinding, in the surfing, in the dog style. He's more of a heavier guy, and he has like the most like insane skills. You know, he still did really well considering it was light, but he's able to also do really well when it's, you know, strong because he's a bit heavier. He was one actually that, like, in a dog style race was pretty interesting. His dog style technique, his burn was like, his foil was out of the water. He was waiting on the dock and everybody was like foil in the water. And so, like, I would say the most common technique and the most, maybe, like, what I believe is the most, like, reliable, consistent technique is where your foil is in the water from the beginning, you run, and you don't let go of the burn until your feet are on the burn, then you let go of the burn. That's, to me, the most precise way to get on the burn. He was standing foil out of the water, like, pretty much standing on a dock. When they would say go, he just throw the burn, like, throw his foil, like, burn and foil on the water, and then jump on it. So, and somehow he never missed a start. I was like, how? Because when your foil enters the water, what are the chances? You know, sometimes you get that like air stuck to your front wing or whatever. And on top of that, he throws it and then he jumps on it. So then it's like you are moving on like a you're jumping on a moving object. And somehow he like always nailed his start. But to me, that was like the, like a very interesting technique. And he worked because he was very consistent and he did really good.
Yeah, because on top of that, so you have the you have more speed when you get on foil if you use that technique. And I see like Yvonne and other people in Switzerland, they're using this technique. Essentially, yeah, sometimes they're even keeping the board with one hand and then they are throwing the board and then jumping on it. So it's super technical, but it's probably an advantage in such races.
Plus,
but
I like what you said. Also, really cool.
Yeah, that's true. I like what you said in terms of like not being the lightest one. I believe that being light, as you said, is an advantage when you're like downwinding in light conditions or when you're freestyling. There, it's really an advantage to be light. But even these sprint races, you need power. Like if you're very light,
yeah, exactly.
You, I mean, pretty much cannot even accelerate the foil and give that power that you need to gain speed, to generate speed during the turn. So yeah, that's something interesting as well. But you were mentioning something earlier on. I interrupted you, if you still remember it.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you like, about the foot straps. Like, do you see people, using foot strap dog styling? Is that because
just the top guys who used foot straps, yeah. And, they really pulled their board up and it was this huge movement. Like for me, I was just like hopping on my board slowly, gently, and they were just like going up and down, really going full at it. But those were kids, they were under 20, they were probably under 60 kilos too, so they can, yeah, they really pump super small, yeah. 700 square centimeter front wing. I saw that and I thought like, that's not possible. How is this possible?
Yeah.
But sometimes they missed the start, but usually they managed, yeah.
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago, it was in France. The company that I'm collaborating with, Kados, did this event. And then the Swiss champion, he's like 17, 18 years old, something like that, Edan, came over. And it was like everybody with the same foil, right? And he tried first with a board like mine's without foot straps, and then with the same setup with the foot straps. And first of all, he's able to static start, to start from a static position at 700 square centimeters foil. So it's something crazy. And he's not even that light. He's like 6-7 kg less than me, so 69-70 kilograms. So pretty crazy. Anyway, with the foot straps on a sprint race, he was able to chuck down like 3 seconds over a 40 seconds ride. So if you know what you're doing with the foot straps and you can get the start, because that's another level, like as you said, that's something incredible. So on top of everything, you still have to get your foot in, otherwise you're pretty much gone. And he was able to, if you know what you're doing, you're really cutting on something, even in the sprint races. And of course, it's an advantage in the downtown. My camera just died, but it's an advantage in the races when you have to freestyle, you need to jump and stuff. Yeah, you need foot straps, of course.
Yeah.
Listen, Gwen, I would like to talk to you also about Wingfoil Pro Center and your collaboration with Damien, because I have no idea how you guys met. Were you a teacher there, or how did that happen?
It was very like random. I mean, like I lived at the time when we met. I lived in Idaho, in the mountains in the U.S. And I was gonna go buy a van in Florida, and I was following Damien on social media because I found his creativity on social media was like it was the style that I really loved. Like he was fun and he was doing a bunch of stuff, and it was so I like reached out to him and I said like, hey, I'm gonna be in your area for 2 days. And I would love to make a video with you. At the time, I was a videographer. I was making videos for small businesses and stuff like that. So I was like, I was thinking, yeah, it would be cool to use my skills with this guy that has a really good talent for writing. So maybe we can make something cool. But he was like world champion in kiting in 2011. So to me, I'm like, I'm like reaching out to a guy that's like world champion. He's not going to probably reply to me. But anyway, I was like, I'm going to message him on Instagram. And he replied and he was like, yeah, like, let's do it. And turns out like we got so lucky because the 2 days I was there, we had wind. So we did some filming and I like edited a video that was different than what he was used to. It was not necessarily about like, showing cool stuff. It was more about like, the story actually of like his friend Harry, older guy, bald.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like about how like amazing, it is that like you can be having so much fun. Like the video was kind of like, it's never too late. And he kind of like loved the video that I edited. So I was like, dang, like we really connected. Like I feel like we could do something. And I had this draw of like, I really want to get back to the ocean. Like I had been in Idaho, far from the ocean, but the ocean was important to me. So I was like, maybe we could do something together. So I said like, would you be interested in like starting a YouTube channel together? And that's kind of like he was interested, and that's kind of like how it happened. So then I decided like, well, I'm going to spend some time in Florida. In the winter, we can film some videos and then I go back to Idaho, and that's how it started. So, we started the YouTube channel, and it was like, the goal was really to, provide something useful for people. It was not like, it was never like about like, how cool, how good he is, or, it was never about that. It was always about like, okay, you have talent, but how can we make it useful for people? So it was more about like, inspiring, giving, positive message and sharing a bit of knowledge. And so that's how it started. That was, that was the intention, and it worked. Like people were like really interested. It was also a good timing because it was the beginning of like wing foiling, so there was maybe a need for that. And so from that, you know, success, and a few things happened along the way too, but ultimately it led to we have, you know, this YouTube channel, and people are like always reaching out to ask for, you know, where do I learn, how do I, you know, I want to get lessons from you guys. And then also like, you know, gear question, you know, what do I need, you know? So I was like, well, maybe I can take this on as a business. And so I started Wingfold Pro Center. It's kind of like independent from Damien, because Damien already has like a job in the industry. So he has a full-time job. So we do the YouTube channel together, but then, you know, he has his full-time job, and then I created Wingfold Pro Center to create a job, you know, for myself.
That's so cool. I mean, again, thank you so much for I learned so much from you, Kyle, you as well. I learned so much from just watching you and gone over those movements and whatnot. That's so cool. If you film, Gwen, are you alone, or do you have a team around you?
Yes, there's no team. I mean, you know, when I'm with Damien, we kind of like do it together. So that's the benefit of, you know, being together. I can film him, he can film me. But we do spend a lot of time apart, you know, that's why, like, you know, a lot of the videos are like not together. You know, I spend a lot of time in Idaho, he spent a lot of time in Florida. So, when I'm on my own, I ask my wife or like someone like, hey, can you film this? Like, that's why, like, if you look at like my video or like, you know, the videos we post on it, it's very simple. You know, there is, it's not fancy shots. Like it needs to be a shot that we can get on a tripod with somebody that's never held a camera, that can just point it and we get the shot. So, it would be amazing. I mean, like, I would love to have like a budget and have like, somebody legit to film, get drone shots and all of that stuff. But it's not the reality. We can't like pay someone to do that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you've got quite a few videos who are like very, very well done. Like there is, I think, a professional guy handling the camera, because we can see not only like the camera perfectly following you, but also like zooming in and zooming out seamlessly. So yeah,
That's like, that's just like me in the software, like zooming in, zooming out, like on the like editing.
All right.
But I would say, yeah, I mean, for sure, everybody that helps us, you know, we are very grateful. I'm not going to say they are like, they don't know how to film. They're going to be offended. But I'm thinking about my wife who's right here, and she's like, what? but yeah, no, it's like, we keep it very low key, like very easy. It needs to be simple. And also for the reason that, like, you know, we try to be consistent on like, you know, posting videos. And so it needs to be simple. Like it cannot be too complicated. I mean, for sure, if you go back to like when we started the YouTube channel, I was, spending, you know, more time really to like, you know, to get it going. And so it might be a bit more like fancy like stuff. But now, it's to the point where, like, you know, I'm busy, Damien is busy, like, it needs to be something, you know, quick, convenient, but it also needs to be useful. Like, I'm going to skip, you know, we try to post every Monday, but if I don't have something useful to post, I'm not posting. I'm not going to post something to post something, because the point is to provide some useful information for people. And so, like, I'm not trying to spam people and be like, you know, it's Monday and I need to post something, I'm gonna give you whatever I have. I'm like, no, if I don't have something that's gonna help you, I'm not posting.
True, I like that. Yeah, I used to be in that mindset as well. Like, I need to post twice a week. But then at the end of the day, actually, as you said, like, if you don't have really something meaningful, just you can just save time and do something else. And so you're still editing, like you're editing your videos your own yourself.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very simple.
Yeah, for sure.
The key is just like, you know, well, you know, get good quality sound, you know, I think like, you know, that's pretty important. But after that, and we also make it, you know, Damien and I, we are very aligned in terms of like the style that we work. It's like we would rather, you know, when we make a video, it's, we pick a topic, or we heard people have an issue and they're asking us, we think we can, you know, give information to solve it. We turn on the camera and we explain it. So it's never perfect. It's never scripted. We forget things and there is no cut. And one of the reason is also because it needs to be efficient. I'm not going to spend like 2 hours cutting things and putting like reorganize. No. And it's like, I cut it, you know, when it starts, I cut it when it stops. And that's what it's gonna be. So we keep it real, and we prepare in a way that like we think about it in advance what we're gonna say. But like these are like what we say in the videos is like is things that we tell people all the time, whether through like, you know, teaching or through when people reach out to us and they ask. You know, so when it's time to make the video, I mean, we've explained it like so many times. It's like, all right, you know, let's roll it, turn on the camera, explain it, done deal, add some footage to show, and we are done.
That is so cool, really. And the last one was the Parawing, right? The Parawing one.
Yeah.
A lot of people watching that.
So the Parawing, I mean, to me, it's like very interesting because it's new. And it's opening new opportunities. To me, I don't see it as like a replacement for anything. I see it as like a new tool to learn something. And so I actually see it very similar to the foil drive, because it's kind of like an assist to get you to the point where you shut it down. And then you foil. So exactly like the foil drive. The foil drive is supposed to be like you put it high on the mast. That's your assist. And then you kind of like get up high and then you foil. So I see it very similar to that. Except, you know, maybe it's a different, you know, price point. Yeah, it's maybe a bit cheaper than the foil drive. But it's a tool that like to me can be used for learning how to downwind. It could actually be a tool also to learn how to pump if you have the conditions where you live and it's windy. Then it can be, you know, your assist, just like the foil drive, it gets you up on foil, you shut it down, you pump, you only get 3 pumps, you deploy again, and then you try again. So I think it's a pretty, like, you know, interesting tool, and I like the simplicity of it. And how like compact it is. Like, it doesn't take room at your house. It's one, like where the foil drive is like, you have batteries, you have that, you have this. This is like one piece. It fits in a tiny bag. You can travel with it. You could use it with your dock stand burn if you wanted. You could, you know, like, it's a pretty versatile tool. And I feel like it's like, it can really help people. So I'm kind of like, you know, all about it. For myself, I don't use it a ton because of like the conditions I have, and also there are a lot of situations where I could use it, but I'm very content with like downwind subfoiling and using a paddle. So that's kind of like what I love. And so like personally, I don't use it a ton, but I see the potential for like many people.
Thank you very much. Gael, I see that we passed an hour already. Do you have any more questions on your sheet?
That's beautiful. My last question would be, what microphone are you using?
like
to record in the water.
Well, it depends. Like when we are like we have I'm like, because I used to do like filming like as a job. Like I have some like pretty like fancy like mics that are like pretty expensive. Sennheiser, you know, they are linked to the camera. It's amazing. But underwater, like to me, like you can use you know, a GoPro. I mean, the system we have is actually like, it's actually like, I have a friend that's like a crazy like engineer. He like made something silicone it. But the point is like, what you could use is like a small, it's not, you know, that cheap either, but if you get like a small GoPro, like the mini or whatever, and you put it the wind muff that, you know, I use, all you need is like something to record the sound. If it's in the wind muff, it's going to make it clean. It's going to record the sound separately. So that's the downside, is like, it's not going to be linked to whatever camera you are using. So you have to like link the sound in post. The other thing is, you know, it's going to be waterproof, but once it's wet, the sound is terrible, because the wind muff only works well if it's dry. So like, it's, you're not going to break it if you fall, but once you fall, it's kind of game over. So if you look at like all my videos, like if I have good sound and I'm on the water, I haven't fallen yet. Like, and then once I fall, it's, you won't see the footage because the sound is terrible. And so that's also why, like for example, you know, I used that, for the powering video, and I use it, you know, in small conditions, in a bigger, on a bigger bone, on a bigger foil. I know I'm not going to fall. And so I can get the shot. That's a lot of like how I do it. And then even for the camera, like I hate when you have drops on the camera, and the only way not to get drops on the camera is you don't fall and you keep it dry.
Yeah, that's true. Anyways, I think that's it. Unless you have something to add, like a message, just like the one that you had at the end of your videos, to inspire people.
For sure. I mean, thanks for, you know, making your videos, because I know, like, you know, pump foiling is like, is not easy in a way that like it takes time. You know, you've put in the time, and now, you know, you are like able to like share your knowledge and your journey. So all of that is like, you know, super like valuable, and it's helping people. But also, you know, what I would like to say is like, you know, you've put in the time. So that's the key. Like, sure, you know, you can share what you learn now, but you will never be able to skip putting in the time, even if you know.
True.
Because what you know, the tips that you share, and the tip that I share, you know, it makes sense for me in the way that like, and it makes sense for you. Like, we feel it because we've experienced it. When you say to someone, maybe they understand what you say, but it just doesn't click. It just doesn't, you know, they don't feel it. So, what I want to say to everybody, if you are in the process of learning and you are frustrated and you are questioning the gear and you are questioning your technique, most of the time, it's just that you haven't put in enough time. And the thing that's kind of unfair is not everybody needs the same amount of time. So the other thing is like, you know, don't always question like, you know, if you have the right gear or if you are doing the right technique, put in the time. And I was going to say something else, but I kind of like lost my train of thought here. But you have to get out there, and there's no shortcut. So like, you know, just keep at it, and yeah.
Yeah,
but it's totally worth it.
Yeah, totally worth it. Sure. And I would say also, don't compare yourself to others. And don't put yourself time constraints. Like if you say, I want to learn it in 3 months. No. I often do like, yeah, I'm going to learn it in 1 week, to, you know, to make the video interesting and compelling. But the truth is that, and I'm saying this on a long form format, like on a long form video, but the truth is that, yeah, there's no shortcut. And like, you can do things good, you can watch the videos, but literally the only way you're going to get it is by going out there and putting in the effort, putting in the time. Yeah.
And when you compare yourself, you know, you look at someone and you think, you know, it took them 10 tries and they got it. And you've already put 20 tries and you don't understand why you are not getting it. And it's, that's how it is. Like, you know, some people take 100 tries and some people take 10 tries and it's not fair, but that's how it is. But the, like you said, it's worth it. Like once you get it, it's amazing. I mean, I remember, you know, back when I used to like look at people foiling and I was like, this is amazing. And now like thinking that I'm doing it is like, it's so rewarding. And that's why it's worth it. It's because like you work so hard to get it. And then when you get it, it's the most incredible feeling. So like, don't give up and keep at it.
Some might even argue that if you had to put in more work, that it's more rewarding. Anyway, Gwen, so we talked about Wingfoil Pro Center. Can people take classes?
Yeah. So it depends of the season. I'm not always in the same spot and I'm trying to like organize some like kind of like camps, clinics sometimes. So if you basically go to wingfoilprocenter.com, you can send me a message. And I can you know let you know like if I have any clinic or camps coming up, or if not, if private lessons are available and where. So that's the way to do it.
All right, cool. All I have to do now is tell you what the next episode is going to be about. It's going to be with Nathalie Brugère. She's a 2-time Olympian sailor. She's a cancer survivor. And she's the helm, or she was the helm at the Swiss of the Swiss team at the Women's America's Cup team. I sailed against her when I was 13, and I haven't seen her since. So yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be another kind of foil, really.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like she's very driven, and that would be interesting to hear her process of how she's able to do hard things. You know, because obviously, I mean, she survived cancer. She's able to accomplish things that are like, you know, at the highest level. So I'm interested to hear like how she approaches challenges.
All right. I'm going to write that down as a question. Thank you very much. All right. See you guys in the next one. Thanks for listening. You'll find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. And thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.